This is a big story today. Startling evidence from the current head of the Northern Ireland Civil Service yesterday as he became the most high-profile witness to appear at the RHI inquiry. David Stirling revealed that meetings with government ministers, and he wasn't talking about just RHI, he was talking in general, meetings with government ministers, with politicians here in this country that you live in, were not minuted in case you, the public, found out about unpopular decisions that politicians were contemplating. Have a listen.
A feature of the devolved administration here has been that the two main parties have been sensitive to criticism. And I think it's in that context that as a senior civil service, we got into the habit of not recording all meetings on the basis that it is safer sometimes not to have a record that, for example, might be released under Freedom of Information, which shows that things that might have been considered unpopular were being considered.
Safer to not have a record. Safer that you, a citizen in this country, will not find out. Let's speak to the newsletter's political editor, Sam McBride. Good morning to you, Sam.
Good morning, Stephen.
You know, I look at this story and I think it is an incredibly important story because this is civil servants and politicians working together so that things are not written down so that the public can never find out.
That's exactly it. And I think the very obvious question there is why would they not want the public to find out? Now, David Stirling partially answered that in terms of his explanation for it. He said that ministers want to have this safe space to be able to bat around unthinkable ideas with their officials. They want to be able to consider things that might be very controversial, even if they don't ultimately go for them. I think there's a very broad understanding that that is something which is probably healthy and it's probably good that ministers can have those sorts of candid conversations. I think what happened here went way beyond that. And first of all, it involved not recording key decisions. So it wasn't about where vague ideas were being batted around. This was where key decisions about hundreds of millions of pounds of public money were being taken, and there was no clear record. It would seem partly, at least, as a result of this culture that had developed where this was being recorded. And I think the second aspect of that is that in the Freedom of Information Act, there are a host of exemptions which are meant to protect this idea of a safe space. And the key arbiter of that, I suppose, is the Information Commissioner's Office, who's the watchdog. And that means that you've got somebody who's independent of government, who can look at this, who can say, is it in the public interest that this should be withheld, or is it in the public interest that it should be released? This is the civil service, and this was the last DUP Sinn Féin administration, I suppose, going way beyond that and really taking it into their own hands to say, we will decide what the public get to know. And we see that not only does that have problems in terms of the democratic accountability in terms of what's going on within government, but it also has massive problems in terms of actually a functioning, coherent government, because if you don't write things down, you get into all sorts of difficulties, all sorts of ambiguities. And we see that really unfolding before us in the RHI inquiry over the last few weeks.
Sam, the Nolan Show is going to disclose right now to you, and this is the first time that we're doing so, that we know of another very senior civil servant who has said the following, who has said the actual to and fro of what's really going on rarely goes down on paper. Now, if you combine what that very senior civil servant has said, the actual to and fro of what's really going on rarely goes down on paper. That's part of the way things work these days, he said. Combine that with what the head of the civil servants is saying, and we have a situation in Northern Ireland where it is a deliberate function of the civil service to suppress what is actually going on in Northern Ireland.
I think in some ways, if we think about how the DUP and Sinn Féin are structured and how they function as political parties, maybe we shouldn't be so surprised by this. These are parties which like to really keep things very close to their chest. They often don't tell their own members, even some quite senior members, what's going on. We've seen that recently with the DUP and the deal that wasn't a deal, or the draft deal that wasn't a draft deal. And I suppose maybe it's not any great shock that they tried to do that in government. I think the big shock here is that the civil service seem to be saying, and clearly are saying, that they acquiesced in that. So because their political masters wanted something to happen, they bent and, it would seem, broke their own rules or their own guidance as to how they should operate, how they should conduct good government in order to satisfy this, really this plain desire for secrecy, this desire to keep things away from the people who elect them. And I think that's something which really, I suppose, goes to the heart of why there is so little public appetite for Stormont coming back at this point. There's no great love for it because while it existed, there were all sorts of problems which we saw on the outside, health, the welfare reform issue, up and down, all of those issues. But inside the system, there was all sorts of problems going on, which we're now beginning to learn about in a much more detailed way. I mean, I think the big surprise yesterday is that David Stirling said what he said, and I wonder whether he would have said that if he had thought that the DUP and Sinn Féin were next week or next month coming back in to give him orders. I wonder if there's a bit of freedom now among some of these civil servants to actually tell us what was going on without any sort of concern that they will suffer as a result of it.
Here's the question to the civil servants who did acquiesce, Sam. Why did they do it? Is it not their job? Are they not paid to serve the public? Is it not their primary role to adhere to what the rules are, to serve the public and not to serve their political masters? Who are they working for?
That is exactly the system as it is meant to operate. I think that the whole idea of a neutral civil service, a civil service which stays in the post really as the permanent government, really with no big changes on that side of the government, regardless of who is the minister, that really takes a battering if you have a situation where they are bending or breaking rules based on who is giving them orders at any one point. And they are also meant to, of course, serve not just the politician and not just the wider sense of the public or the public good. They're meant to serve the Assembly to a certain extent. They're meant to give it clear information. If the information isn't being written down, how can they accurately answer Assembly questions? How can they accurately give information to Assembly committees when they ask for it? If it doesn't exist, they can quite honestly stand up and say it doesn't exist, but they know in their mind that something has happened. It's a huge grey area.
And is it not dangerous that you now have individual civil servants deciding what to write down and what not to write down? In other words, they're looking at a politician and they're deciding in their own head based on whether what? Based on what criteria are these civil servants deciding whether they're going to make a public record of this or not in case the public find out? They're deciding what might be unpopular if the citizens of this country ever found out, are they? Because David Stirling uses the word in his testimony to the RHI inquiry, unpopular. He says a feature of the devolved administration here, and remember this is when David Stirling was a permanent secretary, not when he's head of the civil service currently. He said, a feature of the devolved administration here has been that the two main parties have been sensitive to criticism. And I think it's in that context that as a senior civil service, we get into the habit of not recording all meetings on the basis that it is safer, sometimes, he says, to not have a record that might, for example, be released under freedom of information, which shows that things that might have been considered unpopular were being considered. Unpopular, in other words, not popular with the public, Mr. Stirling? In other words, the public can't find out? And as you made the point this morning, Sam, freedom of information requests are supposed to be that legislation decides what the public is entitled to know. The clue's in the title, freedom of information, and here you have civil servants suppressing it.
That's right, and there's a very simple premise to the idea of freedom of information. It's that the public pay for this. These are public servants. They have paid for this information to be created. A lot of it affects them in terms of their daily lives. They have a general overriding right to have access to that information unless the wider public interest in terms of national security, in terms of commercial confidentiality, in terms of some of these areas trump that, and that's where there's a balancing act. I think this is a second tier, really, of secrecy, because what we saw with Stormont, while it did exist, where it did write things down, it was very often very reluctant. In fact, it was one of the worst parts of the UK in terms of the public sector for being open and transparent about what they did have. So this is actually saying that even when stuff was written down, it was very difficult to get it out of Stormont when you had a right to it. But now we realise that there was a host of other material which was deliberately, not out of laziness, not out of sloppiness, it was deliberately not being written down because they thought it might be embarrassing.
Stay there, Sam, for a few minutes if you can. The leader of the TV, Jim Allister, with us this morning. What's your reaction to this, Jim?
Well, I was astounded to hear this because this takes us to the very heart of the independence of the civil service. It's quite clear from what Mr. Stirling was saying that at the behest of ministers and in collusion with them, the civil service decided that they would play along and not do what they ought to do and not do what they traditionally do and record meetings with ministers in terms of key decisions and other things.
Well, you use the word collusion. I see nothing in the testimony here to show that David Stirling or any of his colleagues were asked not to do this.
Well, he said that the DUP and Sinn Féin were very sensitive to criticism, and you know that because they stay off your programme because they're sensitive to criticism, that they were very sensitive to criticism, and therefore the civil service went along with not recording. That was the essence of what he was saying. So it's quite clear to me that the initiative for this came from the politicians, and the civil servants went along with it. And that's quite, I find that quite astounding. I find it something that goes to the heart of the independence of the civil service. And if, maybe not so surprised by the ministers. We had some suggestion of it in the Social Development Committee inquiry into Red Sky when there were a distinct absence of minutes of meetings with ministers, etc. So I think it has been endemic for a long time. But at one point I did want to
Jim, make... Jim, sorry to interrupt, but we can add more to this morning because the Nolan Show is in a position to state this morning that we know of another senior civil servant, very senior civil servant, who has said, quote, the actual to and fro of what's really going on rarely goes down on paper. Now, just think about the meaning of that sentence. The actual to and fro of what's really going on very rarely goes down on paper.
And that's at the behest of the politicians, with the civil servants apparently complicit in it. But that brings me to the point I wanted to make to you. Look at the ministerial code. The ministerial code has a section which says, ministers must at all times ensure that all reasonable requests for information from the Assembly, users of services and individual citizens are complied with, and that departments and their staff conduct their dealings with the public in an open and responsible way. Now, how is this compatible with the spirit of a ministerial code which says ministers at all times must meet all reasonable requests for information from the public if they deliberately, consciously set about making sure there isn't a record of information in order to have it disclosed? So it seems to me it also takes us very close to breach of the ministerial code, but it certainly takes us into territory where the civil service shouldn't be in terms of facilitating the political requirements of their ministers in regard to covering up anything that was discussed.
Sam, we have a question into David Stirling this morning asking how it is befitting of a head of civil service. He's currently the head of the civil service. He wasn't at the time. Asking how it is befitting for a head of civil service to have done this. And I think a follow-up question, Sam, might be that given David's role now as the head of the civil service, will he give an undertaking not to let anything like this happen again under his watch?
Was he partially answered that yesterday, although probably not fully, but he said that there was guidance that had been drafted which addressed this issue, and he said that was really sitting on the desk of whoever would be the incoming minister, and it would be for them to take a decision at the moment.
But Sam, is it not for him? Is it not for Mr. Stirling to decide what happens under his watch as head of civil service in the future?
I think there's a slight distinction here. I think he was talking about meetings with ministers and ministerial submissions. So that technically doesn't happen because he is acting as, I suppose, the de facto first minister almost. He is the sole person who is in any sort of control of Stormont at the moment. But yes, if the civil service within their own systems are operating to the same level of transparency, that then is a massive issue. If you have no ministers, no assembly accountability, nobody over these people whatsoever, and they're not writing down what key decisions are being taken, I mean, that is a recipe for a very, very obvious financial disaster at some point.
Well, this is my point. This is why this story is so important. This is what I'm asking this morning, Sam. Not about previously. Right now, are the civil service currently continuing to not record things in case the public find out and it may be unpopular? Because there are no politicians watching over them. Are they continuing with these practices of not recording things in case citizens of this country find out?
Well, I think that will go to the heart of this to a certain extent, because while the civil service has got huge questions to answer about whether they should have gone along with this, and I think it's very hard to argue that they should have gone along with this if it was an unreasonable request from a minister, if indeed it was a clear request from a minister. But I think in a situation where there is no ministerial request of that nature, where there are no ministers whatsoever, where there's no political pressure about unpopular decisions, this is, I suppose, the acid test of whether it actually was coming from the politicians or whether civil servants don't want us to know certain things because they would rather be able to do them without it being recorded. So to a certain extent, that I suppose, will get to the heart of the matter now that we don't have any politicians whatsoever in the system.
Jim Alistair, what questions have you to currently ask this morning about this story of the civil service?
Well, I think Mr. Stirling, considering he was the permanent secretary, that at least acquiesced in this and is now the head of civil service, has a lot more explaining to do as to how and why he allowed this to evolve, because it does suggest to me a lack of resilience in standing up to ministers and saying, no, civil service rules would not allow that to happen. I'm sorry, we must record these decisions. And this, of course, goes to the heart of some of the matters being pursued in RHI, because there are critical decisions which I suspect now there will be no record of. There are critical areas of dispute where civil servants say we put certain things to ministers, and ministers may well deny, no, we never heard of that. And if there's no record, then how is the truth ever to be uncovered? And that, I think, goes to the motivation of the absence. Why did ministers not want to have these things? I think it was probably about more than just thwarting FOI. I think it was about making sure there wasn't a record that could be pursued, that the trail would go cold on various decisions, and we may well see that in RHI, and that will be a critical consideration.
Here's what we asked both the DUP and Sinn Féin this morning, because this goes to the very heart of our democracy. We asked the DUP, did the DUP make it known in any way for meetings not to be minuted or otherwise recorded? And the DUP say, it's highly inappropriate that the DUP would be requested to comment on issues that are subject to a live public inquiry. Well, let me just say back to the DUP, we're not talking about RHI here. We're talking in general. Did the DUP make it known in any way for meetings not to be minuted or otherwise recorded? And we would say to the DUP this morning, you can continue to say that this all hangs on the fact there's a live public inquiry about RHI. I'm not asking you about RHI. I'm asking you, did your party try to suppress information from the public which would otherwise be disclosed through freedom of information requests? We also asked the DUP, was Arlene Foster aware of any request within the party to do this? And interestingly, Sam McBride, the DUP, have ducked that question.
Well, I think, I mean, I'm struck by the absence of a clear denial of what has been alleged here, because it was very specific. It wasn't a general sense of ministers in Stormont in terms of SDLP or Ulster Unionist or Alliance or anything of that nature. It was very specific about the two big parties, and that I don't think I think the head of the civil service must have realised that he was being very specific about this. There is a slight difficulty for the DUP in terms of what the chair of the inquiry, Sir Patrick Cox, Coughlin has said where they shouldn't comment on evidence as it's unfolding. Having said that, I think, as you say, this is something which goes far beyond the in terms of the RHI.
And with respect, for us to respect the inquiry and indeed the head of the inquiry, to make it very, very clear this morning, the Nolan Show does not want to interfere with that inquiry. We do not want to ask questions, any questions specifically about RHI. We are talking here about the broader question of our democracy. And I use that word "our" deliberately. This is our democracy. These politicians are working for us, for every one of you. These civil servants are paid. Every time you go out and you do a job and you see money coming out of your pay slip, that's paying for these civil servants. They're working for you. And yet they are deliberately not writing down information in case you ever find out. We asked Sinn Féin this morning similar questions that we asked the DUP. We said to Sinn Féin today the following. Did Sinn Féin make it known in any way for meetings not to be minuted or otherwise recorded? Sinn Féin's response? Sinn Féin adhered to normal practice for recorded meetings. That's it. That's all they can say about it. Was the Sinn Féin leadership aware of this request to not minute or otherwise record what was going on within our government? Sinn Féin's response? Sinn Féin adhered to normal practice for recorded meetings. Did you, Sinn Féin, try to suppress information from your own electorate? 03030 80 55 55. And remember what the Nolan Show can also reveal this morning. Two quotes. The actual to and fro of what's really going on very rarely goes down on paper. Quote one. Quote two. That's part of the way things work these days. From a very senior civil servant. Sam McBride, thank you. Let's go to your calls now. 03030 80 55 55. Nigel in Belfast. Morning, Nigel.
Hi, Stephen. Can I just say first a big thanks to Sam McBride. I mean, you as well, but he's been all over this, all over the detail of this for years, and again, it's really, really important. I'm probably not a natural newsletter reader, but the work has been outstanding. So that's the
Sam McBride is continuing to demonstrate that he's one of the most important journalists in this country. Full stop.
I think for me personally, this isn't really a Sinn Féin or DUP story. If you're a senior civil servant, you're asked a question. The simple answer is, I'm terribly sorry, I'm not doing that. You know, and you can even make it politely be known. If you ask me that again, I'll have to record that in an email to somebody as a chain, and that stops it. So the real issue here is, Sinn Féin or DUP may or may not have asked the question. The answer is, the Northern Ireland Civil Service is, you were asked and you could have said no, and you chose to say, okay then, let's do that. And that's the real issue here. This is not a DUP or Sinn Féin. This is the integrity of the Northern Ireland Civil
this
Service.
This goes to the heart of the integrity of the Northern Ireland Civil Service. There is a question, and it's for everyone else to decide, but there is this morning a question for the public to decide about where they rate the integrity of the Northern Ireland Civil Service if they are now learning that the Northern Ireland Civil Service are proactively not writing things down in case they're unpopular with people like you, Nigel, in case that information is unpopular with people like you. Who are they working for?
No, I think it may be linked to the same thing you've had recently in the whole, you know, you should be more on board with the peace process kind of thing. And I think that the civil service maybe got infected a little bit with we're here to support these parties at a difficult time and let's make it easy for them and everything else. And maybe that's, you know, we all work in offices, we've all got to work with people, and you can see how that sort of getting cosy and getting pally thing can happen. And it's not unnatural, it's not a bad motivation. But actually, if you do that and you end up going down that track, this is where you end up.
The two questions that we have into David Stirling this morning, stress, we do not want to interfere with the RHI inquiry. We are not asking him about any role he may have played or didn't play in anything to do with RHI. So we are talking in general. During David Stirling's tenure as a permanent secretary, and indeed to every other permanent secretary in Northern Ireland, did they do this?
And you're absolutely, this has nothing to do with RHI. The RHI actually is partly because this may be an outcome of this. I mean, this didn't just start at RHI. This must have been going for a long time and across many departments. So this is a cultural issue for the Northern Ireland Civil Service. And I suppose people listening to this may think this is like a dry, inside Stormont story. Well, actually, it's not, because the outcome for you and me and everyone else listening is when this kind of stuff happens, what happens always, inevitably, and without exception, is it ends in incompetent, bad decisions that we end up paying for. So anyone who thinks this is a boring non-story and is sticking across to something else, actually it's not. It's a really, really important and a very, very expensive story for us, and the RHI is simply the outworkings of that.
What should happen now?
Well, I suppose we need to get a lot more facts, so let's not all go completely bananas about this. But, at what level do people who are senior civil servants, take responsibility and say, actually, no? And, I don't want to call people to get sacked. This is really, really important. I mean, what do you have to do to get sacked in the Northern Ireland Civil Service? If you can't even take minutes. I mean, I work in business. I was on a phone call earlier on with a colleague from Japan, a colleague from Sweden. If I'm not talking to you, I'm writing notes up for that meeting, because in 6 months' time, when we go to refer what happened in that meeting, no one's got a memory that remembers that. The actual record is the notes I write down. And actually, that's a fundamental part of my job. If I don't do that, I'm in trouble. And, It may seem a dry thing. If you don't write it down, it didn't happen. And then who knows what? I mean, everyone forgets stuff. We all forget stuff. Who knows what was said, what was agreed, and then people go off and do stuff. It's just about this is not even about Northern Ireland sectarian politics. This is just about the functioning, just administrative capabilities of our civil service.
Nigel, thank you.